the nations. Meanwhile, the UN chief has urged Israel to exercise maximum restraint and respect the right to freedom of peaceful assembly. Amid soaring tensions in Jerusalem Al-Quds, which has seen weeks of clashes, the Israeli authorities question whether a new uprising can now be inevitable. Unabating protests across the occupied territories have proved that Jerusalem Al-Quds is a red line for Palestinians, and they will always defend it with all means possible. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
No more silence. Say a word. Pro-Palestine activists gathered outside the UN office in Tehran to demand that the United Nations take action with regards to Israel's expulsion of Palestinian families in Sheikh Jarrah and other areas in East Jerusalem Al-Quds. Mostly student, the protesters called the Israeli move barbaric and against all international laws.
I'm here to support Palestinian rights. As for the recent crimes against humanity, these aren't recent. These have been around for a long time. It's more than, nearly 70, 75 years that the ethnic cleansing of Palestine has been an ongoing process. This needs to stop. And more people need to stand up to Israel and to the crimes that they're committing. We need to talk about this and we need to stop this.
We have come here to voice our solidarity with and support to our brothers and sisters in Palestine and to condemn the inhumane behavior of the Israeli regime against Palestinians. We regard the UN silence as complicity in the crimes committed by Israel.
Israeli forces have over the past days been attacking Palestinian homes in East Al-Quds Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, trying to force the Palestinians to abandon their residences in an attempt to make way for the construction of new illegal settlements. The regime has so far wounded dozens of Palestinians protesting against the decision made by an Israeli court.
During the past days, there have been heinous crimes against the innocent Palestinian people by Israel. It's interesting that the U.S. claims to be the defender of human rights. I wonder why is Joe Biden keeping mum and not condemning the Israeli violence? Where did all the human rights slogans go?
Israel has for 7 decades been pressing ahead with the construction of illegal settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories and continues to deny millions of Palestinian refugees the right to return. Several attempts have been made to solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the last of which was the so-called deal of the century, proposed by ex-US President Donald Trump, which is dismissed by Palestinians as an attempt to trade their identity and history with money.
Rights activists here say Israel's recent atrocities are a proof that the so-called peace plans by the West cannot defend the rights of Palestinians and will only make the Israeli regime more insolent in its crimes in Palestine. Protesters say it's time to take action, as any silence by the international community is tantamount to a green light to Israel's violence against Palestinians. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
A lot of work is needed and time is limited. That's what Joseph Borrell, the EU's foreign policy chief, has told a ministerial meeting in Brussels with respect to ongoing talks in Vienna to try and save the JCPOA Iran nuclear deal.
It's an effort to make the US to go back to the agreement in order to have a full compliance for Iran, which is the best way to ensure the exclusively peaceful nature of Iran's nuclear program.
Tehran insists it has zero ambition to build a nuclear bomb. The idea that Iran wants a nuclear weapon is peddled by Tel Aviv and the Israel lobby in the US, according to unbiased security experts.
Where is the evidence, they ask? How many times has Washington launched attacks on foreign nations without any justification?
Critics say the West's meddling in the Middle East has caused immeasurable damage.
Well, the biggest failing of all was the, intervention of the United States into Iraq, after 9/11, because this created a security vacuum.
EU and US foreign policy was recently debated in the European Parliament.
We must work for stability in Iran and Iraq and Lebanon, a peace in Syria and Yemen, and oppose the US-Saudi attempts to isolate Iran.
The Iran nuclear agreement, underpinned by the UN, was thrown into flux when Donald Trump pulled the US out of the accord 3 years ago this month. He then imposed harsh illegal economic sanctions on Iran. Saving the nuclear deal would help to bring stability to the region, it has been suggested.
It is a vital area
we should to make it a quiet area, because you know it is on the middle of the trade road, so it will affect all the economy situation in all the world.
Joseph Borrell has told EU foreign affairs ministers the talks in Vienna, Austria are extremely delicate, sensitive and intense. He says he's optimistic and a window of opportunity will stay open until the end of this month. Nothing is agreed until everything is agreed, he insists. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God. Welcome to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. Because we are in the month of Ramadan, we wanted to, hover around the questions regarding fasting and Ramadan, but according to Ayatollah Sistani. Before that, let's take a listen to a short biography.
The Grand Ayatollah Sistani comes from the family of scholars and pious men. He learned theological and rational sciences from many eminent and well-known religious scholars. At the age of 5, His Eminence started learning the Holy Quran. He was then admitted in a religious center for reading, writing, and for learning basic mathematics and geography. In the beginning of 1360 Hijri, he started studying basic Hawza lessons. He also studied a number of books on philosophy, like Sharh Manzuma Sabzawari and Sharh Ashraq. Meanwhile, he attended Kharij lectures by the late Mirza Mehdi Ashtiani and the late Mirza Hashim Qazvini. In the late 1368 Hijri, he migrated to Qum to accomplish his studies in Fiqh and Usul. His Eminence left Qum for Najaf al-Ashraf. On having arrived in Najaf, he began attending Qayatullah Khoi and Sheikh Hussain Hilli's lectures in jurisprudence and the fundamentals of jurisprudence. In 1380 Hijri, Ayatollah Sistani traveled back to his hometown, the holy city of Mashhad, expecting to stay and settle down there. In the same year, he was awarded a permit by Imam Al-Khoi and another by Sheikh Hilli, certifying that he had attained the level of ijtihad, that is, deduction of legal judgment in matters of religion.
Sheikh Javid, well, today is actually the Eid al-Fitr in some countries, and I'd like to extend my congratulations from the whole team, on behalf of the whole team and crew here. In fact, to those people who are, in fact, enjoying their Eid. And it might also be, in fact, the last day of Ramadan in some other countries. Because of this, let's, have a few questions regarding fasting and Ramadan, and especially at the end, inshallah, we'll be addressing the issue of Zakat al-Fitr. Well, let me begin with this question about the countries, in fact, with different horizons than the normal ones, such as the North Pole and the South Pole, or any countries around those areas, all right?
Yeah.
Well, the day, in fact, or the daylight throughout the whole day is not 24 hours. I mean, like, sometimes it happens that, like, 60 months or a few months of night and day.
Yeah.
So what are the Islamic laws regarding that, especially when it comes to fasting in Ramadan?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I wish we had discussed this issue in the early days of Ramadan. Unfortunately, we did not make time to discuss it. But for our audience who are interested in learning the rules regarding ahkam for the next years, maybe these answers might be of some application to them. Let me tell them, and let me tell our audience that if a Muslim lives in a city that has daylight, let's say for 6 months, and darkness during the rest of the month, like for example, in some parts of Canada or in some parts of North Pole, there are Muslims living there. It is obligatory for him to act according to the horizon of the nearest city or town, which has regular sunset and sunrise during 24 hours. Okay, there are cities and near the North Pole, let's say, and they have regular sunset and sunrise, so they have to follow the horizon of the nearest city or town or country. And of course, such people should perform his prayers with the niyyah of absolute qurba. Qurba means proximity and nearness to Allah. And as for fasting, of course, he should move during the month of Ramadan. If that's not possible, if it's not possible to act according to, let's say, to the horizon of the nearest city, he should move, let's say, to a city with normal day and normal night so that he can start fasting. And of course,
is it a must, or if they cannot do because of their job, for example?
It's not a must. Of course, if possible, and if his life is not affected badly, he should move to that to such a place. But you know, generally speaking, it's very difficult to move. You know, people who are established in a city or who settled cannot move to such places. And as for countries, let's say, as for countries with, let's say, 23 hours of sunlight or 22 or 21 hours of sunlight and then darkness, of course, such people should observe fast if they can, you know. Like countries like, say, let's say, in some parts of let's say, Switzerland or maybe not Switzerland, maybe Norway or Canada,
right?
They have sunlight for 23 hours. So such people should fast. But if fasting becomes absolutely difficult and unbearable, then the obligation is actually forfeited. It is they are exempted from fasting. And of course, if it is possible for them to do the qada later, they should do the qada in other seasons by moving to another city. And of course, it's obligatory for such people to do the qada if they are actually able to move to another city.
But if they can't?
And if they are unable even to do the qada, then it's obligatory on them to pay fidya in lieu of fasting or in place of fasting. You know, fidya, that's clear, that's 750 grams of foodstuff which they should give for each day.
I see. What about those countries, as you mentioned, like Switzerland or Sweden? I had a friend from there, you know, and they were complaining about fasting for such a long time, actually about 22 hours, even sometimes more. So they said that they've got like 22 and a half
hours of sunlight.
Yes, yes.
So what can they do? It's too difficult, actually, to fast for so many hours.
You know, as I said, fasting is obligatory if they have the ability to fast. You know, it depends on a person's ability. Otherwise, if one is unable to fast for 22 hours, then the obligation is, according to Ayatollah Sistani, forfeited. It means you're no longer...
fit to fast.
Yeah, you're no longer supposed to fast.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Yes.
Okay. Some other quick questions regarding Ayatollah Sistani's fatwa. Well, about swimming.
Yes.
Or diving underwater. Would you tell our dear audience about the Islamic law, according to Ayatollah Sistani, about or concerning being in the water?
Yes. Well, swimming is permissible and also diving is permissible. And Ayatollah, this is the only issue. This is the one of those issues where Ayatollah Sistani's opinion in fatwa differs from the fatwa of other religious authorities. Ayatollah Sistani is of the view that diving underwater and even immersing your head underwater does not make your fast void.
Mm-hmm.
So it is permissible to dive and to swim underwater and keep your head underwater. There is no objection.
I see. Okay. Some other quick questions regarding brushing or perfume, for example. Are they forbidden for somebody who's fasting?
Brushing is allowed as long as you're confident, as long as you're sure that that no substance from the toothpaste gets into your throat. That's absolutely permissible. As far as perfume is concerned, of course, perfume is mustahab. It is not going to affect your fast and under any circumstances. It's permissible, no matter, even if the perfume contains alcohol, there is no problem. Let me tell our audience and say that alcohol, industrial alcohol, is pure and it's permissible to apply it even while praying. There is no problem, even if the perfume contains alcohol, it's not going to affect the prayer.
What about nasal spray?
Nasal spray is permissible for people who have actually respiratory problem. It is permissible, but one has to make sure that it is ingredients or the fluid, because there's fluid that goes into your nostrils or maybe into your let's say throat. One has to make sure that no substance of the nasal spray goes into one's food tract. You know, there are two passages. One passage belongs to the respiration,
yes,
and the other
bronchial
one
tubes,
and the other one is to the food. Ayatollah Sistani says that one should make sure that the nasal ingredients or substance should not go into the throat.
I see. How about Zakat al-Fitr? What is the Islamic law about Zakat al-Fitr? When should it be paid? And how much?
Zakat al-Fitr is obligatory on a person who is capable of paying zakat. Like, for example, someone who is poor, who is extremely poor, and who struggles with his daily bread, is not supposed to give zakat al-Fitr.
Mm-hmm.
And the same is the case with his children. The children of the poor person who is dependent on that poor individual is not supposed to pay zakat. The amount of zakat al-Fitr is 3 cloves of wheat, okay?
Yes.
And if a person wants to give the price worth 3 kilos of wheat, that's sufficient. So it is obligatory to separate and to take out the zakat from one's asset, from one's money, before the as early as in the morning of Eid al-Fitr, and he has time to separate it until midday of the Eid day. And of course, a person can give his zakat al-fitr at any time during the month of Ramadan. If someone wants to give zakat al-fitr in the early days or early week, in the first week of Ramadan, it is permissible. And if he wants to give it on the Eid day, it's permissible. But it is obligatory to give it as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is a poor person in your vicinity or in your neighborhood, you have to give it to your vicinity. And if you have a relative who is poor, you should give it to that relative.
Yes, you said Zakat al-Fitr is obligatory for those people who are fasting, but not poor, right?
Not for those who
financially capable to pay Zakat al-Fitr. But what about those people who are, let's say, not fasting because of their conditions, probably medical health issues, whatever? Do they have to also pay Zakat al-Fitr?
Of course, everybody, every individual, even a child. Of let's say one month child, or a child who's just been born, he has to his parents, his guardian has to pay Zakat al-Fitr, and of course
whether they're fasting or not. So it doesn't depend on that.
Yeah, Zakat al-Fitr has to be given in the city and town where you live, and you cannot take it out and send it to another place. Of course, if there is no poor person in your town, you can send it to another town to be given to the poor.
Thank you very much. There are many more questions that I hopefully, God willing, will ask you in the next episodes to come. Thank you very much for accepting our offer and coming to the studio and shedding some light on these questions related to this special holy month of Ramadan. If there is a cream of the crop for everything, if there is a bride for everything, I guess that Ramadan is the cream of the crop, the bride of all months that there are to it in these 12 months. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا كتب عليكم الصيام.
All you who have faith, prescribed for you is fasting, as it was prescribed for those who were before you, so that you may be God-weary.
رمضان زمان الحسنات
رمضان زمان البركات
رمضان زمان الحسنات
رمضان زمان البركات
رمضان مجان الصلوات
تسمو بالنفس لمولاها
رمضان مجان الصلوات
تسمو بالنفس لمولاها
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website,
www.parstoday.com/en.
Attacks by Israeli forces against Palestinians in the occupied Jerusalem of Quds. On Monday, over 300 Palestinians were wounded after Israeli troops fired rubber bullets on them around the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Scores were detained by Israeli forces. The protests erupted after Israeli troops stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in an effort to force out the Palestinians. The violence around the mosque and the Old City were the worst since 2017, fueled by a years-long bid by Israeli settlers to take over Palestinian homes in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood. The Israeli regime is also celebrating its 1967 occupation of Jerusalem al-Quds.
There are several facts here. One is that this is a process of, once again, of ethnic cleansing in broad daylight. It is a provocation, obvious provocation against Islam, and has appropriately been denounced by most Arab countries, including a couple of them who are overly anxious to normalize relations with Israel, and hopefully will now reconsider what they've done.
Sheikh Ikrimah Sabri, the imam and preacher of Al-Aqsa Mosque, has condemned the attack, calling the raid a heinous crime that cannot be tolerated. Leader of the Palestinian National Initiative Party, Mustafa Barghouti, called the Israeli raid on Al-Aqsa Mosque compound a criminal act. Barghouti described the raid as a racist act by an apartheid regime.
Well, Israel is indisputably an apartheid state. It always has been from the outset, from 1948 on. It simply wasn't called that. The apartheid nature of Israel was confirmed in 1967 when it invaded the West Bank and Gaza and East Jerusalem. Mustafa Barghouti is absolutely 100% right when he calls it a criminal act.
The military brigade of the Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas, also warned against the presence of Israeli forces in the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The situation is so fluid, and resistance movements fired tens of rockets toward occupied Palestine Monday afternoon. The clashes in Al-Aqsa Mosque have drawn widespread condemnation from the international community. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres urged Israel to cease demolitions and evictions, saying Israeli authorities must exercise maximum restraint. The U.S. government, however, stopped short of condemning the Israeli aggression against Palestinians. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan instead conveyed serious concern to his Israeli counterpart about violent confrontations in Jerusalem al-Quds. Arab nations, including Syria, Iraq, and Qatar, also hit out at Israel over the Jerusalem violence. Some Arab countries, including those that last year normalized relations with Israel, condemned the Israeli aggression. Iran, Pakistan, and many other nations also slammed the attack. In Britain, Germany, Turkey, Jordan, and elsewhere, people took to the streets to condemn the Israeli regime's atrocities and voice solidarity with the Palestinian people. In some countries like Oman, people gathered in front of the Israeli embassy to condemn the raids.
It's clear, I think, to the peoples of the world, even if it's not necessarily to political classes in the Occident, in the West, that the Israeli regime is a criminal entity, and what they're seeing practiced against the Palestinian people, Palestinian worshippers, which is really a reflection of a process that's gone on for far too long and backed by Western governments, specifically Washington and its allies. So there's no surprise in the fact that people everywhere in the world are outraged.
The Israeli desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque is nothing new. Israel has done similar acts in the past many times. Tel Aviv has been violating the rights of Palestinians with impunity since its installment in the region by its Western creators. The regime enjoys full support from the U.S. in particular.
The reason that Israel was created in the first place was that it was meant to be a foothold for British expansion into the region and to the control of oil and gas, natural gas resources in the region.
What is clear is the fact that the Israeli aggression against Palestinians cannot end through dialogue. Israel has defied calls to stop violating the rights of Palestinians for decades. Many factions in Palestine have also come to the conclusion that Israel can be pushed back only through resistance, and that any effort short of resistance will come to nothing given Washington's all-out support for the Israeli regime at the UN Security Council, the only world body that can issue a binding resolution against the regime.
The people of Palestine have long suffered aggression at the hands of Israel, but that escalated to epic proportions in this Ramadan. The regime launched a crackdown on Palestinian worshippers and restricted their gatherings in the old city of Jerusalem al-Quds during the Muslim holy month. Later in the month, an Israeli court ruled that over a dozen Palestinian families must leave their homes in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in East Jerusalem al-Quds immediately, despite having lived there for generations. The eviction order sparked several protests in the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip. The crackdown on ensued injured hundreds of Palestinians. It also drew condemnations from the international community against Israel, with even the Arab countries that have recently normalized ties with the regime, namely Sudan, the United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain, denouncing the Israeli forces' storming of the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
It's not only the general oppression of Israel, but Israel got very aggressive with the district of Jerusalem, Sheikh Jarrah, where they want to get rid of all the remaining Palestinian families. The Israelis, I think, did not anticipate what they were stepping into when they chose to evict all of these families at the same time in the month of Ramadan.
The United Nations Human Rights Office urged Israel to cease the eviction order immediately. It said, "The transfer of parts of an occupying power's civilian population into the territory that it occupies is prohibited under international humanitarian law and may amount to a war crime." Israel has been trying to downplay the recent clashes, with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu strongly rejecting international pressure not to build settlements in Jerusalem al-Quds.
We also firmly reject the pressures not to build in Jerusalem. To my regret, these pressures have been increasing of late. I say also to the best of our friends, Jerusalem is Israel's capital, and just as every nation builds in its capital and builds up its capital, we also have the right to build in Jerusalem and to build up Jerusalem. That is what we have done, and that is what we will continue to do.
But under international law, all Israeli settlements are deemed illegal. The United Nations Security Council has condemned Israel's settlement building activities in the occupied territories in several resolutions. Jerusalem al-Quds remains at heart of a decades-long conflict, with Palestinians insisting that East al-Quds, illegally occupied by Israel since 1967, must serve as the capital of a Palestinian state. In the meantime, the Al-Aqsa Mosque has had enormous significance throughout the years. In the year 2000, an Israeli official's visit to the holy site provoked a Palestinian uprising known as the Second Intifada. Observers say the recent escalation of violence surrounding the Al-Aqsa Mosque could be a prelude to a third intifada.
As far as I'm concerned, an intifada is always possible in Palestine. The Israelis are putting more and more pressure. They're hoping to keep the pressure at just the right level to cause, to motivate the ethnic cleansing, the expulsion of the Palestinians, the marginalization of the Palestinians, without having it explode completely.
Emboldened by former U.S. President Donald Trump's all-out support, Israel has stepped up its aggression against the Palestinian people. But with Trump gone, for how long can it keep on committing its crimes?
The coronavirus pandemic has struck a heavy blow against major economies across the globe. Many people have lost their jobs or seen their income cut. However, development of vaccines was a breakthrough. Countries across the globe launched vaccination programs in order to reverse this negative trend and help their economies recover. Yet things have not worked out well for the world's largest economy, the U.S. According to the latest monthly employment report by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the U.S. economy gained only 266,000 jobs last month. That is while economists had expected the number to top 1 million. Also, the unemployment rate rose to 6.1% amid an increasing shortage of available workers. But there were more bad news, as March's originally estimated 916,000 job gains were revised down to 770,000. Vaccination efforts and the relaxing of lockdown measures across the U.S. were expected to result in steady job growth. Yet the disappointing report is a surprise setback for U.S. President Joe Biden's efforts to revive America's economy from the coronavirus pandemic conundrum.
We came to office, we knew we were facing a once-in-a-century pandemic and a once-in-a-generation economic crisis. And we knew this wouldn't be a sprint, it'd be a marathon.
The April data shows the U.S. economy still has 8.2 million fewer jobs than it had in February of 2020, before the pandemic hit.
We're still digging out of an economic collapse that cost us 22 million jobs. Let me say that again. It cost us 22 million jobs. When we came in, we inherited a year of profound economic crisis and mismanagement on the virus.
Biden claims his $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief package is helping the U.S. economy to recover and is also pushing for another $4 trillion to be spent on infrastructure, education, and other priorities. However, his critics object to the high price tag and are warning that that could bring inflation. Moreover, Republicans and business groups have raised concerns about a disincentive for people to return to their jobs.
The reality was 75% less than what they had predicted. So it's a huge shortfall. I believe the economy is much weaker. I believe all the talk about a super powerful recovery was overdone. I think the economy is really struggling with the after effects of the pandemic. It's listless, it's weak, there are huge financial problems.
The U.S. Labor Department's monthly report fell significantly short of expectations. While economists predicted that the economy would add about 1 million jobs, the report was a huge disappointment. Economists attribute the disappointing results to a range of issues, including safety concerns, child care issues, as well as extended unemployment benefits. In addition, according to government surveys, the number of unemployed workers is way higher than job openings. Also, there have not been any meaningful wage increases either, which are a hallmark of labor shortage.
There's a lot of speculation as to why. The Republicans, the conservatives blame it on overgenerous unemployment benefits. I'm very skeptical. I think those jobs do not pay very well. I think if wages were higher, workers would be quicker to sign on. But as things stand now, the wages are so low that it may be more worth their while to stay at home and take care of the kids.
Unemployment rates for Black and Latino women remained high. That is while women are being employed at lower rates in the U.S. Meanwhile, the hard-hit hospitality sector, which includes restaurants and hotels, and also manufacturing sectors, are unable to fill their job openings. That is while the unemployment rate is at high levels. Many unemployed Americans are reluctant to look for jobs because they fear catching the coronavirus. Others have entered new occupations and have left their old jobs. Moreover, many women, working mothers in particular, have left the workforce to care for children. Republicans and critics blame the Biden administration's policies for the slow economic recovery.
Well, that's what the Republicans complain. They want to see unemployment benefits cut because they want to force workers to go back to work. But it's very hard to tell. The wages have fallen very low. And workers have a lot of responsibilities at home.
The latest report reveals that the U.S. economy still has a long way to go to recover from the coronavirus pandemic.
The remaining signatories to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal have been meeting in the Austrian capital, Vienna, in recent weeks to find a way to salvage the international accord. While few details about the talks have been revealed, Press TV has learned that the U.S. and the European signatories to the deal apparently want the destruction of Iran's new generation centrifuges in return for a temporary suspension of some of the sanctions related to the nuclear deal, officially titled the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA. This is while, under the JCPOA, Iran's advanced centrifuges, including IR-4, IR-6, and IR-9s, must be stored away under the supervision of the International Atomic Energy Agency and not destroyed. Press TV obtained information that shows Iran won't give in to the excessive demands of the Westerners, and also in case of insistence on the part of the other side, the possibility of the JCPOA, and not just the negotiations in Vienna, unraveling altogether will be real.
The Iranians have seen what the Americans and the Europeans have done. They've talked and talked and talked a lot about how they want the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action to succeed, and yet they've done everything in their power to ensure that it won't succeed. The Europeans refuse to permit to trade with Iran in any kind of barter arrangement, even with that INSTEX, that International Exchange Program. So they're simply kowtowing to the Americans, acting as their running dogs, and simply making a big production out of nothing. It's a simple matter to abolish the sanctions and rejoin the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. But of course they won't do that, and they want to blame the Iranians for their own failures.
The new demands, meant to impose new nuclear commitments on Iran, have been put forward while the U.S. has not even agreed to remove all the JCPOA-related sanctions, a condition set by Tehran for a possible U.S. return to the nuclear deal. U.S. President Joe Biden has expressed his willingness to reverse Trump's policy regarding the JCPOA and to rejoin the deal. However, his administration has so far refused to take any meaningful action to gain Iran's trust and come back to compliance. External influences may have been a contributing factor. The U.S. president has reportedly met with the head of the Israeli regime's intelligence service, Mossad, in Washington, D.C. last week and told him his country isn't close to returning to the Iran nuclear deal. Biden reportedly said the United States has a long way to go in talks with Iran before it agrees to return to full compliance, comments that appear to have been assurances to Israel, which is a vehement opponent of the deal. The Mossad chief also reportedly asked Biden not to rejoin the accord without improving it first.
Well, Yossi Cohen, meeting with Jack Sullivan, Biden's national security advisor in Washington, with Biden just happening, mind you, happening to drop by the talks, is a clear indication that it's outside pressure and it's aimed at making inside demands and inside controls on the American government. By the Israelis to reject and ditch the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. The Israelis are probably afraid that someone might ask questions about why the JCPOA applies only to Iran and why isn't there not one that applies to Israel, India, and Pakistan, other nuclear states, with a very unstable track record. So I think that it is pressure from the inside, pressure under the table, if not subterranean.
Iran says the ball is in the U.S.'s court to return to the agreement and remove all its sanctions on Tehran, or pursue the failed policy of its predecessor, known as Maximum Pressure Campaign, and push ahead with its hostile policy against the Islamic Republic.
The light.
Using an unusual array of tools for a haircut, that's what a Pakistani barber does to rise above the competition. Ali Abbas lives in the city of Lahore, eastern Pakistan. He uses blowtorches, meat cleavers, and even broken glass to do a cut. He typically begins a haircut with a blowtorch to take a bit off the top. He then uses a cleaver and butcher's block and sometimes broken glass to cut the lower layers. His style is proving to be a hit.
This idea was not a joke. One day I was thinking of doing something different. It was my desire to do something in a different way. Since I started this, my customers have increased. People's confidence has been boosted. When you're visible on a platform and people see you, people will say, we must try this, we should try this.
Abbas has been using this style since 2016. He says he has received a very good response from his clients. His peculiar approach has also resulted in TV appearances and fashion shoots. It's not an everyday scene for Londoners to see a whale swimming in the River Thames, but over the weekend, the city witnessed a small whale being rescued after it got stuck along the river. The baby whale was first spotted in the evening, becoming stranded on the Lock's boat rollers in Richmond. Rescuers worked during the night to free the 4-meter-long whale. After 4 hours, the injured animal was successfully moved to a safer location. A vet is now monitoring its situation to make sure it's healthy enough to be released back to the ocean.
People around the world dream of having special weddings, but these couples in Russia have made their wishes come true. 30 couples in Moscow have gotten married on cable car cabins, hoping to set a world record. The sweethearts exchanged vows mid-air with a picturesque view of rainy Moscow. If the attempt to set a record is verified and confirmed, it will go to the Guinness Book of World Records. The wedding ceremony in Russia has turned into an extraordinary one as it was celebrated on a 720-meter-long cable car. 30 Russian couples tied the knot in the moving cable car cabins on Saturday. Even rainy weather in Moscow didn't stop them. The newlyweds said they wanted to make their already special day as unusual as possible. They also hope that their mass wedding would set a Guinness World Record. The remains of 9 Neanderthals have been found near the Italian capital, Rome. Archaeologists believe the oldest one is dated to around 100,000 years ago. The other 8 remains are dated between 50,000 and 68,000 years ago. Researchers unearthed the fossil fragments in the Guattari prehistoric cave, or caves I should say, near Rome. Neanderthals are the closest ancient relatives of humans. They died out about 40,000 years ago. Some theories say they died because of their inability to adapt to climate change.
Thousand drones have lit up the sky of a northwestern Russian town in a dazzling show commemorating the country's victory in World War II. The drones flew in formation and displayed images related to the deadliest war in history. The show ended with a giant dove of peace flying above mesmerized spectators. Russia commemorates its victory day on May the 9th every year. There is also an annual parade which the authorities decided to postpone due to the coronavirus pandemic. Humans have used the services of honeybees for centuries. Now, Dutch scientists have found a way to get help from these small animals in detecting the coronavirus. Let's have a listen.
We take the bees from a honeybee keeper here in the region, and we use a set of bees every day, and we put those bees in harnesses to fix them, and then we present coronavirus positive and coronavirus negative samples. And after presenting a positive sample, we always present sugar water afterwards. So in the end, the bees extend their proboscis after being presented a coronavirus positive sample. And in that way, we can train bees pretty quickly.
The bees indicate a positive COVID-19 result by extending their tongue to drink a reward of sugar water. Using these insects as coronavirus testing tools can significantly shorten the time spent on waiting for the result of a COVID diagnosis. It can also be very important in countries where there is not enough infrastructure and testing. Bees have an unusually strong sense of smell. They have already been used in some parts of the world to detect explosives and toxins.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A recently installed pizza-making machine is pitting itself against masterful chefs in the Italian capital, Rome. The tall red machine has become a head-turner in the city, which is famous for its pizza, one of Italy's most iconic traditional dishes. The customers get to choose amongst 4 types of pizzas plus a drink. A few minutes after placing your order, you will receive a dish on a platter fresh out of the oven. But Italians say the pizza can't compete with those made traditionally.
The true pizza is made from a wood oven. I wouldn't even take into consideration eating a pizza from a machine.
So far, the reception from people has been far from favorable. However, some say the final product can be acceptable considering its price or if you're in a hurry.
As many countries accelerate their coronavirus vaccination programs, life is gradually getting back to normal. Now, residents of a nursing home in the Spanish capital, Madrid, finally get a chance to go out after months of isolation. Around 50 elderly residents and staff from 2 care homes went on an excursion to the Madrid Zoo after they were vaccinated against COVID-19. They visited some of the park's inhabitants, from pandas to elephants, while sitting on a miniature train. They hailed the idea, saying they were bored with staying at the nursing home with no visitors.
It's good to leave, to break the monotony of the nursing home, especially as we have been confined there for so long. It's nice to get outside, so I decided to go out and see the world.
The director of the care home believes the experience makes the residents forget about their pains. Around 43,000 seniors died of COVID-19 during the first wave of the pandemic in Spain. The elderly population was among the first group to receive coronavirus vaccines in the country. Now, looking for a cheaper and more sustainable alternative to traditional lawn mowers. ShipMe may be the answer. Researchers at the University of California, Davis, have embarked on a project to test the effectiveness of sheep as new lawn mowers. The project includes 25 sheep of 4 different breeds. They are going to graze on a 1-acre plot of pasture for 3 days. The process will be repeated after a month.
The sheep have been used for a couple of things. So they're as good as goats in reducing down the vegetation. So in areas where there is, it doesn't just have to be a lawn. If they're in their areas where there's overgrown and you've got sort of those higher fuel ladders, they can eat that down. But what they also do, so they can cut that out, but then they also can come around and after there's been a fire, they're really good at eating the weeds that come up initially, the weeds that we don't want, those invasive weeds.
Researchers believe that the initiative also has an environmental impact. With fewer mowers, there might be less emission. They also hope using sheep will help increase natural fertilization and nutrient levels.
Over the past few years, people have become more aware of the detrimental effect of littering to the environment. Bolivians have launched a nationwide campaign aimed at protecting the country's scenic spots and waterways from human waste. Hundreds of volunteers were seen cleaning up the Valley of the Souls near La Paz, which is famous for its unusual razor-sharp rock formations. The volunteers, aided by heavy machinery, managed to collect over 15 tons of plastic waste and construction rubble from the rocky canyon. Activist Carola says people needed to speak up more in defense of the nature, which is increasingly coming under threat.
It is incredible how we can find jewels like this painting amid all these piles of rubble and garbage. And we are surprised and ask, what is going on with nature? It is a tourist place where many people come. The Valley of the Souls is very special, and many people have gathered together here to be a voice for nature and to get it the care and respect it deserves.
Last month, the campaign also cleared the highland lake of Uru in western Bolivia, which is said to be full of more plastic than water. Campaigners say they will continue their efforts until no place with garbage is left in the country. An exhibition in the Belgian province of Walloon-Brabant has put on display several objects belonging to French Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte. A belt with the word Waterloo written on it, a flintlock pistol, Napoleon's shoe, bathtub, clothes, and several other objects are all displayed in the exhibition. Many of the items are brought from Napoleon's last residence on St. Helena Island. The curators say the exhibition aims to show Napoleon's daily life and the way he lived. Earlier this week, an auction was set up in France offering Napoleon's blood-stained cloth, estimated to be sold for $18,000. May 5th marks the 200th anniversary of Napoleon's death.
IRIB English Radio.